board decision. And it was just you were always on edge, you know, it was just a terrible situation to be in, you know, thinking that, you know, you could be dead any day now, you know. It was just a horrible situation.
So the state almost took your life. They did take 40 years of your life. Will you be compensated?
I have no idea, ma'am. It's a long process. Mr. Howell could probably answer that question better than I could.
Well, Brian, you have 10 seconds.
Well, it is a long road. You know, certainly I think he deserves something for the 40 years that was taken from him, but that's something that we'll just have to see as things move forward.
It's amazing already $43,000 has been raised just from people who care about you, Ricky Jackson. We will continue to follow to see what the state will do. Ricky Jackson has just been released from prison after 39 years for a crime he did not commit. Longest held man who's now been exonerated. His lawyer, Brian Howe, a staff attorney with the Ohio Innocence Project. Happy holidays to you both. That does it for our broadcast. If you'd like a copy, go to our website at democracynow.org. Our specials this week will be Noam Chomsky for an hour and Isabel Allende. Tune in. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
And it's just after 12 o'clock. You're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL in Haleiwa, K224CQ Moloa'a. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Robin and Paul, and on today's show, we will feast on an abundant food crop with deep roots in Hawaiian culture and catch up with the Kauai Food Forest as it enters its third year. But first, we would like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our fine sponsors.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all-natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, systems, and setups. In the Puhi Industrial Park, Lihue. Family-owned and operated, open Monday through Saturday. More information at 246-4769. That's 246-GROW and online at GardenIslandHydro.com.
And thank you all to all of our fabulous underwriters keeping us on the air along with you, our listeners. And it's just super to be back here at KKCR with you for In the Garden on the Farm. And great to see you, Robin.
Great to be here on the day before Thanksgiving, that big holiday we all spend so much time preparing for.
And we've been looking forward to this show, haven't we?
Indeed. Giving thanks.
Yes, indeed. And so we give thanks right now again for our radio station and the fact that we are still on air, yet As some of you may have heard, we've had some extra challenges reaching our fundraising goals this season. We had a lot of things going on the island that kept people's attention diversified, shall we say. And we've just run into a new snag here at the station. Our AC unit has broken, so we're actually sitting here in a very warm studio. It's usually quite cool, but right now it's pretty oppressively hot, and not such a big deal for us programmers, but it's all about the electronics here. There's a lot of valuable electronics that require cool running temperatures to stay healthy and not just crap out in the middle of a program. As well, Dean, our station manager, reminds us that the AC dehumidifies the station as well. And so now without this AC unit, we are susceptible to moisture getting into the equipment. And as you can imagine, we don't have a whole lot of extra money to buy new equipment.
That's right, yeah. We're gardeners. We're used to sweating and being hot and humid. Unfortunately, the electronic equipment that helps our airwaves get out there to you folks is really important, and it sounds like it's going to be a pretty big investment. It's a little bit of a hard hit for the station right now, having fallen short of our fund drive goal. So we're reminding everybody that you don't have to wait till the fund drive to pledge your donations to KKCR. It's really an ideal time for it right now. Everyone, including the programmers, would be very grateful to have some air conditioning going on.
Indeed, and we're not ashamed to say, but it's a fact of life right now that we're around 75 grand in the hole in terms of what we need for operating expenses now that this AC unit has died, and it's going to cost $20,000 for a new system for the AC alone. So if you feel inspired today to reach out and give your support, we want to direct you to our station. Telephone number 826-7774. That's in the 808 area code. If you're off island, you can call 866-275-1112, or you can go to kkcr.org, and there's an option to donate online as well. We really appreciate your support and keep this place going. So we're going to jump in, as we normally do, to the celestial session here on the Garden program, where we look to the heavens above for inspiration and guidance on our planting, harvesting, and other activities that we might do out as stewards of the land. And we will start with our Hawaiian moon phase, brought to us today as often by the 2014 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, which is a Hanalei Watershed Hui publication. And it's the Astronomical Application Department of the U.S. Naval Observatory that provides precise timing of rising and setting times for the moon. Back to the traditional Hawaiian system of moon observation, which is still very useful and in full practice today, we're going to find that today's Hawaiian moon is Kūkolu. This is in Ho'onui, the first Anahulu, or week in the Hawaiian moon month. This is when the moon is waxing or getting larger night by night, day by day. And Kūkolu rose on Kauai this morning at 10:49 a.m. She will reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 4:36 p.m. and she'll set at 10:25 p.m. this evening. 23% of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated today. We have the first quarter moon coming up late Friday night, just after midnight, so technically Saturday, but just after midnight on Friday night. And the mana'o for Kūkolu, it's the third of four Kū moons in this first Anahulu, or week in the Hawaiian moon cycle. Kū means very many things. If you pull out the Hawaiian dictionary, you'll find it's one of those words that has so many meanings, and many people are familiar that Kū is one of the major gods. And so I immediately jumped to thinking, well, this must be to honor Kū. Well, it's interestingly, Elbert and Pukui, who authored the Hawaiian dictionary, put the definition of Kū as the god Kū pretty far down the list. that it's much more commonly used for many other meanings, one of them being perpendicular, steep, erect, or standing, or those sort of similar meanings. And the thought is that plants planted today will be, they will stand erect and upright. They'll stay up, basically, which with the high winds that we get here, especially in certain parts of the island, our phone tech Mac lives out there on Anahola Beach, and I can tell you those winds blow pretty hard out there. So if Mac was out today, maybe he'll get some things in the ground later today. This would be a good day for people who live in a high wind area to plant their native plants, or plants of any kind, really. The recommendations from the system really focus in on those Polynesian introduction plants. And so for today, the ones that are best supported from planting today would be uala, which is the sweet potato, kalo, taro, and mai'a, which is, I pretty much always say, is banana, but as we will find out in a later segment today, is also the plantain, and we'll try to entangle the difference and what it means to be consuming a plantain or even planting a plantain here in the Hawaiian Islands, a great way to perpetuate traditional Hawaiian culture and put some great food on the table. And that is the Hawaiian moon for the day, Kūkolu.
Very cool. I love these daytime moons. I love it when the moon rises at that time in the morning and the mid-afternoon. It's a kind of mid-sky, and I call it the ghost moon because you kind of have to really spot it from in between the clouds. And
not be too busy to look up and notice, yeah.
Yes, yes. I do try to train myself to look up because I look down so much of the time gardening. Well, in the biodynamic look at things, today the moon's in Capricorn, which is an earth sign, typically when we would work with our root plants. But however, there is a water trine going on at the same time, so the calendar actually favors leaf plants today, although it is in the ascending moon period, so it's technically not planting time in the biodynamic look at things. But we could work with our root or leaf plants today. Yay, the next 2 days are unproductive, which means we can feel really good about really not doing anything if we have other plans for ourselves that don't involve gardening. Saturday. Oh.
Which we might if it's Thanksgiving and we're getting ready to consume
the harvest.
An astounding quantity of calories.
Yeah. Tomorrow. Actually, that makes me think that today's orientation could be good for harvesting if we were going to harvest some sweet potatoes or yams or something to cook up for the feast tomorrow. Saturday, the moon will move into Aquarius, an air sign, which makes it a good time to work with our flowering plants. But in the ascending moon, those flower times mean one thing to me, and that's vegetative propagation. It's a day I like to do my cuttings. And Sunday through Tuesday, the moon is in Pisces, a water sign, making it a good time to work with our leaf plants. And there's so that wraps it up for the biodynamic calendar. But there's some joy in the studio right now that I can't ignore.
I'm sorry for the distraction, but Laura Christine just came in with the great news that we just got an anonymous $1,000 donation.
Wow!
Toward our goal of restoring the proper temperature to the studio.
Yes.
Thank you so much, whoever you are. We love you so much, and we hope that other people would be inspired to support in a similar fashion. We're totally celebrating here. It's super cool. Thank
yes,
you, everybody.
Thank you. Big thanks.
Absolutely. And I was reminded, too, that we were just speaking with Donovan Kabibi. He's one of the new board members at the Kekahu Foundation, which is the nonprofit that stewards KKCR, and he mentioned that in the coming year, there's going to be a whole host of new activities so that we can meet our shortfall, so that we're not solely dependent, not that we ever really have been solely dependent on the fund drives, but so that we can diversify our efforts even greater to get the community to show us their support to keep everything running here, and that we will have a whole new slew of great concerts and other activities. And so that really brings us to the fact that we have a wonderful cadre of volunteers here who oftentimes have their own radio programs. But then we have a bunch of other volunteers that don't necessarily program a show, but support KKCR because they're listeners and they love what we do and they want to be involved in some way. And that's going to be a really important section of the volunteers to step up this coming year, because with the added activities that we'll do, the concerts and everything, there'll be lots of opportunities for people to help produce these shows and help to bring the abundance back to KKCR. So if you're interested, again, we encourage you to be in touch with Laura Christine or Dean Rogers in the office, or even Dove, who helps with volunteer coordination. And again, you can reach them 808-826-7774 at KKCR or kkcr.org for more information on that. There is also a Kekahu Foundation board meeting coming up sometime in January, and they are looking to expand their board membership as well. So if that interests you, please be in touch too. And again, thank you so much for the generous donation today. We're really touched.
Yes, you made our day. All right. Well, we have a really cool discussion about the food forest that we're going to spend most of the show talking about today. But I thought it was a good time to look at Fresh Picked before we enter into the food forest, because Lord knows this fruit has come out of the food forest in such great abundance. It's humbling. And that is the plantain.
And to join us in that conversation, we want to invite in a special guest in the studio, Rob Cruz. He's one of the food forest stewards. He's extremely important to my experience of the food forest. We've spent a lot of time out there getting our hands in the soil, and I would say as important, if not even more important, the walks in the food forest that I've had with Rob preceding the work days, making observations about how our certain practices are either meeting, exceeding, or not quite reaching our expectations, and how we continue to evolve that. Really excited to have you in, Rob, to share your mana'o and experience.
Thank you, brother.
And as well, we're joined, as we are often, by Mac James, who does answer, who is our phone tech for the show, but he also is one of the volunteers who's contributed the most time and energy at the food forest. Folks will know his amazing photography, and as well, he has definitely done a backbreaking amount of work in the forest too. So, Mac, thank you. It's really great to be able to honor the work and the commitment that you've made to the food forest today.
Oh, it's a complete pleasure, Paul, and aloha kauaine.
Yeah, right on, you guys.
Yeah, so...
Well, we're going to jump back to our discussion again on the fresh pick for the plantain, and then we'll get into the food forest proper soon.
Absolutely. I'm excited. I love fried plantains. I think they are so good. I don't eat enough of them. Perhaps not spending enough time at the food forest.
It sounds like you need to bring home some more trees.
Yeah, I think so. Little bit different than the banana. Plantain is botanically known as Musa paradisiaca, as opposed to the dessert banana, whose botanical name I don't have in my back pocket right now. Doesn't really matter, because generally the plantains have a much darker flesh color. And that's kind of what I want to focus on, mainly because I'm reading a really great book right now called Eating on the Wild Side. And the book basically describes how so much of the fruits and vegetables that are available for us for purchase have been bred over so many centuries or decades at least, that often some of the phytonutrients, the things about that plant that are really good for us, have simply been bred out in favor of flavor. Mm. Because generally phytonutrients have a stronger flavor, and we want sweet lettuce and sweet corn. And in those cases, a lot of the proteins and other phytonutrients wind up getting bred out. It's not just soil depletion that leads to less nutritious vegetables. So on that note, this is whopping. Plantains have 270 times the amount of beta carotene than an average banana.
Wow.
pretty outrageous. You can tell by their orange color and the darker yellow flesh inside of these bananas. Now, am I right, guys, that you can eat plantains when they're fully ripe, you can eat them uncooked?
Absolutely. Just like a regular banana, which is like even a better reason to be growing plantains. You know, you get to use them at both stages.
Sure.
And they're huge.
Enormous. Each individual fruit is really good. I think most people's experience with a plantain might be with the Cuban red banana, which, am I right, is sort of falls somewhere in between.
That one actually, is, as far as I know, is considered a dessert banana.
A dessert banana.
So not really...
Not a cooking banana.
Not necessarily good for cooking or considered even a plantain. It does have more of an ivory flesh rather than that yellow or orange flesh that you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting, Wikipedia really... And of course we take things we read in Wikipedia with a grain of salt, and actually plantains are great with salt on them too,
yes.
But I digress. Wikipedia's opinion was that really the difference between plantain and banana is how you're eating it, and that if you're eating it as a cooked vegetable, then it's a plantain, but the same fruit, if you're eating it raw, you would consider it a banana. So I think that's a bit of a subjective viewpoint. If you could say, there certainly are also what would be considered true plantain, which are not the plantains of the Pacific, but ones from more Africa that are have found their way into the cuisine of South America and the Caribbean, with the horn plantain, and popular in Mexican and other Central and South American dishes. I believe that those plantain are actually sourced from Africa originally.
Right.
But there are many different kinds of plantain. I'm not sure I really answered your question.
No, it's okay. At any rate, there's more calories, as in starch and energy, available than bananas in plantains. And in the places where people eat a lot of plantains, such as the Caribbean, Africa, Southeast Asia, and throughout Polynesia, people don't just like plantains, they actually live on plantains.
Yeah, that's their bread and butter. That's their peanut butter and jelly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. They're higher in vitamin C, vitamin A, vitamin B6 than bananas, and they're also higher than bananas in potassium, which is, I know, a lot of reason why people eat their banana a day is to get their amounts of potassium that they really need. So in general, a underripe plantain, you don't really want to eat it raw. You want to cook it unless you let it ripen. And in order to do that, you can barbecue it right in the skin. You don't even have to peel it.
You can just, even the green ones, you could do that, huh?
Even the green ones.
I've never done that, huh?
Yeah. Barbecue them in the skin. Or
you just peel it off? And
peel it off after. You can put them right in the coals of the fire or on the grill.
I haven't done that.
Yeah. Or peel it with a knife, cutting the ends off, and then peeling the skin off, because the skin will be quite stuck to an unripe plantain. And you can mash, grate, cube, slice, and fry, and add to basically any dish that you would add potatoes too. When they're underripe, they don't have that same sweetness that they develop as they ripen, so they're more just a general starch that we can use like we would potato or taro or ulu.
Some plantain hash browns are in order. Yeah.
That sounds really good. I'm a big hash brown fan.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe, Rob, you could say a few words about one of the great innovations you've brought to the food forest, which has transformed many a plantain into a delicious treat.
Yeah, I've been playing with solar cooking for the last few months, and I've also been playing with rocket stoves. And the rocket stoves are fun, but they create a lot of heat and a lot of smoke, and I really don't like to inhale all that stuff. But we did cook up a lot of fried bananas and plantains on those stoves, and it was awesome. But the solar stoves, I think, are going to be like cookware for the Jetsons, man. We have two stoves. We have a little, like an oven, which is made with an evacuated tube that we slide like the bananas inside the tube, and the tube reaches about 300 degrees in about 20 minutes.
Wow.
And cooks us up some really awesome desserts. And we always like, we'll just pack it up and go do our thing. And by the time we come back, we're like, oh, we're cooking food. Totally forgot we're cooking food, because it's like a set-it-forget-it-easy-bake oven. And then the other stove that we're using is like a more of a stove top. It's called like a parabolic. So think of like a big satellite dish that's shiny and is kind of like on a cradle that you could rock and like line up with the sun. And then so once you get the sun lined up and you could cook you know, boil water or use it as a stove top. But the sun has to really be out and ripping for that one to work. But these are two little inventions that I'm playing with, and like as a permaculturist, you know, you gotta try to slowly take your steps back from Babylon. And I think these are the two you know, technologies that I found that I really like. They go really good with food forestry too, you know.
So Robin, too, on the plantain note, you got a hold finally of this book that I've just been touting for a long time, The World of Bananas in Hawaii by Kepler and Russ.
Yes.
And so I wanted to just get your impressions of the book.
I think it's a fantastic book. That's a very meaty read. There's a lot. It's not a book I'm going to be able to get through very quickly because there's so much information, but it's incredibly thorough. And we do intend to share some of our favorite reads with you, our listeners, as time goes by. We have been finding some really cool books, and we're going to recommend that you check them out of the library, or that one in particular you can see at the Seed Bank, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed. We have a community seed bank in Molawa'a. We're going to begin volunteer work days there again. If you're interested in being part of the team, you can reach out to us at 652-4118. We will be having a volunteer training coming up this Monday at 10:30 in the morning. It won't be your only opportunity, but it is the next opportunity to get involved there. And on just to sort of round out the plantain discussion before we move on to the food forest, I wanted to share that at the food forest we do have a number of plantain varieties there, thanks to various people around the state who have been caring for collections and were very generous to share them with us. We have plantains from different parts of the world predominantly. We do have the African/Caribbean varieties, which are considered the true plantain. We have the plantains of Tahiti, which I've mentioned recently on the show.
The fe'i, which has
a seeded, they do not seed here in Hawaii, but they do seed in their native habitat. So this would be a plant that's closer to the wild form, and so would hold some of those phytonutrient densities, perhaps, Robin, that you've been reading about in that book.
We need to find basic plants again. We need to find the plants that have been tampered with the least, and kind of start over.
Yes, in some ways, in so many ways, when plants are selected, if they're not selected for nutrition, and like you have said before, you've echoed the words of Sun, who we had on the show last week, that nutrition is taste, or taste is nutrition, yes, essentially. And so many of the commercial varieties of vegetables are grown because of the ease to which they can be brought to market in a saleable quality, which means they look okay and they're sufficiently uniform and they can survive long periods of transport and all these sorts of things. They can survive pesticides and herbicides or pest and disease or other stresses, but perhaps the flavor, which was our key to the nutrition, was not conserved. Well, in these plantains, for whatever reasons, despite the fact that they are so appreciated and loved by the people who taste them anew, or perhaps know them from their traditional cuisine of wherever they've come from, they still are quite unknown, and they're underrepresented in the plantains that you will find at the farmers markets, although...
Which is very slim to begin with.
Which is slim to begin with. We will often see, I know for the 16 years I've been on Kauai, from the beginning of going to the farmers markets, we see what is often referred to as the cooking banana, and that is a banana that's either a banana called Largo or a banana called Saba. Saba bananas are from the Philippines, and then the Largo from Central America. And these bananas are fat They tend to be more triangular in shape, and they're delicious whether they be cooked or eaten raw at a later stage of their development. And the other thing about plantains, you can eat them raw, you can cook them when they are more on the starchy side, or you can wait until they have developed more of the sugars, and then it becomes more of a dessert kind of a dynamic. But either way, these are the plantain that we normally see at the market. That's pretty much it, is maybe those two varieties. But there are a tremendous amount of native Hawaiian varieties that we can enjoy as well.
Yeah, and it sounds like you might need to go visit the food forest to check some of those varieties out, because we're not really seeing them on the market tables very much.
And they're ripping right now. Actually, I just took a little walk through the banana collection, and they're throwing. And it's pretty amazing. How many varieties do we have? Something like 30?
We're about 30 right now.
30 varieties?
And we collected more, and to be honest, we do continue to lose some of our varieties to bunchy top.
Yeah, we have.
It's an effort that it's really sad on the one hand that we're losing some of these clumps. However, we have taken measures to share them out as soon as possible before they become infected, so that there is a backup collection. Essentially, we're diversifying the number of hands that people are holding these bananas in. And so it's really important for us to continue to develop those relationships with backyard gardeners or farmers who can keep a variety going. And even if they only have it for a couple of years, that they share it out to the next group of people, and that we can keep track of all of the sharings of this particular crop, because it is one that can't be stored away in the seed bank. We can't tuck a seed away in the refrigerator and come back to it in 20 years. It's a vegetatively propagated plant that must be kept going at pretty significant. It takes a fair amount of effort to plant a banana properly and keep it going and feeding it. It's all worthwhile, but it is a bit of work. And so the people who are helping us and part of this, the Food Forest Network, are helping us not only on site, but helping us to perpetuate this diversity all around the island.
Yeah, and that's one of the big things I've seen since I've been there is, we attract in like-minded people there, and we have stewards come and join us from all over the island that all have their own specialties, and as they are able to help us take care of that project, we learn together, and we share experience and share the plant diversity, so that plant diversity could go home with the people that are putting in the effort, and they could help bring it back and stronger, and then they have the knowledge and the interaction with the plant to be able to bring back to the group. So it's a really beautiful thing that we've had set up there to be able to work together and learn. Yeah,
it is, and we're in our third year now.
That's amazing. 3 years already.
Yeah, or we will begin our third year on the 1st of December. That's our second anniversary, which marks the beginning of the third year. And I want to let listeners know that we're joined in studio today by Rob Cruz, who is one of the primary leaders of the Food Forest Initiative. And because we have you in studio, I'm often going on about the Food Forest, but this is a great opportunity, Rob, to hear about your experience, and I wanted to invite you to let people know a bit of sort of your arc of how did you come to the project and what it's meant to you, and why is it that it continues to inspire you?
I came here knowing that I need to be able to get closer to nature and to learn to cultivate her and to be able to live and work in harmony with that. And I found the project, and it was one of the main reasons I moved here. And I was doing other things at the time, but I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. And a lot of that was, I think, embodied in permaculture and food forestry. So whenever I found the project and showed up, and Paul and Mark and the team were already ripping, I was like, all right, this is awesome. Like, they already started it. And the project was, designed by people that knew what they were doing, and they designed it smart, and they had enough diversity in the ground that the system was very stable. So I kind of was able to show up at the right time and help them just plant all the trees in the ground. They already had the system designed out, and was able to kind of watch it from, a pile of cardboard to a big bush of Ethiopian kale into a big bush of, you know, gradually getting bigger and bigger and transforming into what we have now, which is, you know, a massive living system that is taking care of rare fruit trees from around the world. And I think it's what we created was like a pretty much a blueprint of what we should be working on as humans all the time, because everything else is pretty much a distraction.
And this work that you've done has led you through, at the same time that you were working in the food forest as a volunteer, you were managing land on the east side.
Yeah, I was
starting to plant your own food forest.
Yep.
Pretty much as soon as you started volunteering, you were starting to plant your own. Yeah?
Exactly. Like, the food forest was such a gift in the sense that it was already a collection of all the plants I would have been looking for. So it saved me years of collecting plants by myself and interacting with the people that were already there and had the experience of working the land. I was able to acquire years and years of information by just learning from everybody and working beside them. So it was pretty much my university for the last few years, and then I was managing a small piece of land and taking care of chickens and goats and doing food forestry. So I erased a big lawn and turned it into a little food forest, and it's ripping now, and it's pretty much a miniature version of what we did, but with my own twists on it. And then I took it next door and did it for my neighbor, and now we have like a nice swatch of food forest right in the middle of suburbia. Of course, beautiful Kauai suburbia. But yeah, and that's what we should be doing everywhere, is starting to erase these lawns that make you guys walk around in zombie land.
Yeah. Well, you know, something you said, Rob, really struck me, because last week when we were talking with Sun about people working in community and living together in community, so much of what I've learned about community, I've learned from plant communities. And I think that's really one of the most cool things about the food forest, is that it's a people community and a plant community that are sort of intertwined all together. And just like trees thrive when they're in their right place, so do people. And so when you say, you know, you found out what you wanted to be doing, it's almost like mimicking after the plant community, we can find our own, what really makes us thrive, just our right sort of place
conditions,
and
yeah.
And conditions, yeah.
Absolutely.
And if we were to follow that analogy along, I would say that Rob is an assertive, aggressive species of plant that definitely found his own niche in the food forest and has flourished, found that sort of place in the canopy where he could spread his leaves and
flower and fruit,
and has become an essential part of it, truly. And again, I had mentioned earlier in the show, one of the most valuable parts for me of being involved in the food forest has been the walks with you, Rob, through the forest, and truly, on the one hand, feeling like we were having a shared experience, but I have to say that the most important thing for me was I felt like I was getting an education from you by your astute observations of the interrelationships between the elements that we are working on and how we can help to guide that. And I was wondering if you could just share, what is that experience, if you could explain that experience or describe that experience to someone who maybe isn't familiar with making those kind of observations of an ecosystem.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest hang-ups that we were kind of looking at in the forest is what we're creating is not something that people have created. And we got to look at it with a different and more open mind than we would look at a garden, or we would look at a piece of art or something that we normally create. And since this food forest project is something that we're controlling, but it's something that we are not controlling, and there's a line that we had to learn how to walk there, and to be able to put give the opportunity for nature to do her thing, but not get attached to it and not try to control it, but be able to just give her all the right tools and let her do the dance and let her paint it. And it's It's a pretty amazing thing that we pulled off. But the cool thing is it could be done everywhere, and every one of them is going to be a little bit different. But as long as you have the focus in on the right things, and that's like pretty much comes back down to like the permaculture ethics. You know, like everything has to be just healing the land. Like that's the main thing is, what's the main focus? Take care of the ground, heal the ground. You know, and then make sure the people are happy. Like, people got to be happy. And if the people are happy, then, you know, things are easier to work. Because if the people are happy, you don't want to be there. Aren't happy, then you don't want to be there, you know. And then to make sure everyone's happy when, you know, when you actually do have abundance, and to be able to share it, you know. And to be able to just watch the ecosystems and let them, just try to mimic them the most natural way we can. And I think that's what it is, you know, mm-hmm. just mimicking nature.
Yeah, and I want to share a quote that I cropped up from Joel Salatin in his latest article. I grabbed this off the net. I'm not sure Robin has a subscription to Acres Magazine, but has the December issue come out yet, or is it still on its way?
Yeah, not yet.
Okay, so this is a preview that they put out on the internet. And so this quote from organic eco-agriculture guru Joel Salatin, he said, "As eco-farmers, we embrace that mystery for magnificence beyond comprehension. Rather than conquering, we submit. We work with wildness, not against it. Indeed, we should be wildness allies, weaving into our farmscapes the mystery and patterns wildness exhibits. That is our high calling and sacred mission." I think that's
Absolutely. Exactly
what you were getting at.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and I think that's one thing I've starting to step back and not be like, I'm not a gardener. And, you know, I'm not a farmer. Like, I'm just going to conduct nature a little bit.
Yeah. Maybe she'll follow along.
Maybe she'll follow along, but I think I could. That's pretty much what I'm trying to do. I don't want to be pushy.
Right on. Well, I want to get Mac into the conversation here. Mac, you have certainly seen this from pretty much every step of the way through the lens of your camera, and help to reveal so much of the wonder and joy of people's experience, as well as the beauty of the plants. But why don't you share with people about what it's like for you to have made this commitment to be part of the Food Forest team?
Well, like everyone else, excuse me, at the beginning, you know, we weren't sure what was going to happen, and that sure was a big, wide, open space with nothing growing on it except weeds. But we all held the faith, especially Ray Baki, who's just brilliant, and walked us through it, along with Keone from Malama Kauai, and we just went ahead and started getting it done. And from that day, the camaraderie of Food Forest folks has just been amazing abundance, in addition to the food crops and all the love we give to the plants, because it is not a walk in the park some days getting out there. It's really wet and the bugs are eating you alive, but you're smiling and it's all good, and people just get through it. And would greatly encourage or inspire people to give a thought to coming up. And you know, there is no bottom line commitment one has to give at the Food Forest. You can come for 15 minutes. I mean, you can come and just enjoy what everyone else is doing. But it's kind of akin to going to the beach. I live at the beach, and people live around the beach and up the hill, and like, oh, I gotta go to the beach. But they just never get down to the beach. And then they get to the beach and like, why didn't I go to the beach? And I notice so much at the Food Forest. New people, they arrive and they're thinking, oh, they're going to be, you know, sweating and toiling and all that. Well, a little, as much as you want or not. But when they get there, they just light up and they just enjoy it so much. And, you know, they think, oh, well, I only have an hour, and they end up staying the whole day. And they might go away with some food. They might not. But they've had a great time, and it's not in their planning ability. This is something that maybe, and most often, no one has done before when they come, and it's a very openly participant sport, as you say.
Beautiful description. And it is hard for people to make an ongoing commitment.
Well, that's the thing.
Because there are so many great things to do on Kauai. People have so many commitments to other things. They've got to get to the beach, too.
Right.
And, Mac, you've taken some great shots of some wonderful photographs of the volunteers. I thought it'd be fun at some point to stage you down at the beach, down at Kalihiwai Bay, and you can grab photos of the people after they leave the food forest and go jump in the ocean, too, because we know that people definitely like to mix it up. And truly, you can have it all.
Truly.
You can jump in for an hour or two or three of work and still get the beach in and still get the time in with the family. Bring your family, too. People bring their family of all ages.
Yeah.
So it truly is. It can be a good fit, like you said. You can come and observe, and or you can really get in the soil, too. So it's any way you want.
So let me ask, what's the work at hand these days at the Food Forest? I mean, you're entering year three. I'm certain that some things have grown up. Some things that are more perennial are on their way towards the sky. Probably some of the more annual-type stuff is, I'm assuming, gone into the earth by now. And what is it that you guys are up to these days at the Food Forest? What's the next step?
I think what we're pretty much doing is starting to bring down the canopy a little bit. The canopy is big with Suspania trees, and the Glaricidias are starting to reach up there. And last week, I wasn't available, they brought down a whole bunch of chop and drop and are starting to cycle in the trees and open up space for the fruit trees since it's winter time and we have a little bit less sun. And we have the floor pretty covered. One thing I found out in the food forest was learning how to create a ground cover is one of the most important things you do, like, because until then you're just fighting the grasses the whole time. And we have the ground cover pretty established now, and whatever the weeds that come up, we're cycling them through by just chopping and dropping them. I think the next thing would be just continue to add diversity to it. That's what I want to see. I want to see more bushes, more fruiting vines, just more diversity of things that we don't have. You know, Jabote Kaba, we don't have any of those yet. Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Maybe more cacao. Can't have enough of that. What would you like to see, brother?
I'm with you on the diversity, and so the way that we have the food forest design, we have our main fruit trees at about 25-foot spacing from each other, and then the idea is how do we fill in that 25 feet? Because if it's just fruit trees planted at 25-foot spacing, we have an orchard, which we talked about a couple weeks ago.
That's no good.
And orchards are great, but that's not what we're shooting for. That's not what we're shooting for here. We want to have a system that perhaps doesn't, we know that there's a trade-off. We're not going to get as much production off of every tree.
But we're foragers.
If we do interplanting. But we get the diversity, we get more round the season production if we have a variety of different plants growing. It's a lot more interesting of a place to be in. It's the experience of the place as much as it is what you get out of it. What you get out of it is not just the harvest of food, but it's the experience of being in a forest and in a system that harbors more biodiversity. One of our big challenges that we've had last year, and the specter of it was raised about a month ago, was pigs. Now, many people will argue that having wild pigs coming through the system is a good thing because they turn the soil, maybe they're doing some nutrient deposition by pooping in the forest while they're around. But it's not ideal for us because we do like to have productive ground covers like sweet potato as an example. And the pigs just come in and they take the food that we've so lovingly planted. And they do damage some of the young fruit trees. So getting a fence put together for protecting the forest, I think, will really help us to not take two steps back when we make our one big step forward. And that's going to be really important for the morale of our group, as well as just what it is we're able to take home, and also the fact that we will be able to begin to harbor more rare and unusual species and be confident that they'll actually have their roots pointing in the correct direction when we come back the next week. But like Rob shared, we are cutting back our what has actually become the canopy of the food forest right now, which is this really amazing nitrogen-fixing tree.
Suspania, man.
Standing at about 20 feet tall, and like you said, too, this, some of the Gloricidia are starting to reach up to those heights, too. But Gloricidia in its early growth is just more single branches sticking straight up in there, some more of like flags, if you will.
Yeah, it's really leggy still right now.
Whereas the Suspania has created a tight canopy, but we really need to cut that back to allow the fruit trees to grow, to harvest all that organic matter. So we're actually in there with chainsaws, cutting back. We want to put an invitation out for folks who love to do a little bit of chainsaw work and have their own tool to be in touch with us, to get jump in, because if we had a group of five or six people with chainsaws in a safe, coordinated manner, we really could knock out that component of this transition of succession in the food forest.
Yeah, it sounds like you might be able to use folks who have some fencing material, too, to
yes.
at least begin on enclosing that from the
It wouldn't be bad
pigs.
To do it piece by piece. We have two big, beautiful rolls of fencing right now, and that would be one strategy, Robin, would be instead of worrying about gathering it all up at once, we could start building it piecemeal, and we'd at least be 10%, 20%, 30%
right.
toward our goal of getting it constructed.
Well, yeah, I just think it's probably not doing much good against the pigs rolled up laying on the ground, you know?
It hasn't scared them away yet. So.
Well, I know it's a fascinating discussion, but there is more to it, and that is the concept of succession, right?
Mm, yeah.
That's kind of a big factor in the food forest, is how one planting leads into the next.
That's how we pulled it off, pretty much. And in the very beginning, like I know you heard us mention cardboard a few times. The cardboard is what I like to say, like our Band-Aid and our duct tape right now. It holds the ground down. It prevents the weeds from coming up. It holds the water in. It holds the mycelium. It gives a place for the bugs to hang out and have baby love. And
earthworms love cardboard,
they
too.
They do. So, like, the cardboard is the beginning of the succession, how I see it. And so we do the cardboard, and we lay that down, and we pop in the sweet potatoes. And one of the big ones we did really well with was Ethiopian kale and squash. So those plants right there, just to start, are going to create a really low, dense matting. And then you're going to have from those you'll success into pigeon pea, which is going to turn into a nice, solid, bushy tree mass in, like, let's say, what, 4 months, 5 months? About 5 months' time. And then from there we'll step into Ethiopian kale and chaya, and a whole bunch of different kinds of trees that will start diversifying. But in the very, very beginning of the system, sweet potato, squash, Ethiopian kale, like, those are, like, the very beginning ones that really just take off.
Oh, I remember those squash from the food forest. Those were the sweetest, yummiest squash I've ever
huge amounts.
Put through my lips. They were so good.
We had 300 pounds of squash. We had, like, truckloads of squash coming out of that thing.
Yeah.
And that was just, like, a byproduct of the first flush of the system.
Mm. Awesome.
It was amazing.
And we want to remind people, too, that the food forest, or creating a forest from scratch, essentially, and using this process of succession, which is a process of introducing or utilizing different plants, types of plants, like Rob was talking about. We'll have our annual plants coming in, the shrubs, sort of semi-hardwood things coming in next, where we have with our Gloricidia and our Suspania, and eventually the hardwood trees and hardwood plants, which will be our climax fruit trees as the last or the climax of that system. We're trying to figure out how to do the succession, and we basically are working with that pattern that nature uses, yet we're trying to tweak it so that we can speed it up, because we have some pretty significant organic matter deficiencies in our soil at the food forest, and we need to deposit a lot of organic matter on the soil and create soil, basically. So we're trying to figure out that system, and that's just one of the many ways that people can volunteer is, and we said, you can just come and look at what we're doing. Well, observation is an incredibly powerful tool, and so even if folks don't feel like they're physically able to do hard labor type work. There's lots of light-handed work that can be done where you're still involved on a hands-on level in terms of removing tape from cardboard right now is something that we're engaged in. There are sowing of seeds, taking care of the nursery. There's helping making the food for some of the work days. We have a third Saturday work day where we have a larger rollout of a food celebration after the work. But we also have our first Saturday, which is our organizational meeting where we talk about where are we headed and what do we need to do this coming month. But it's also an opportunity for people who haven't been to the food forest to come in and get a tour in the morning, 10 o'clock. We'll take you through the forest, and you can get oriented to why
everything that's going on.
Piece you're doing.
Give you guys a good lowdown, give you guys a good run through the forest and try to help you guys understand what we're doing here, because like, it's a very important project. Like, our current agricultural systems are pretty much hemorrhaging, and they're poisoning the land, the water, and the people. And there's two ways to be able to fix it, and as far as like the soil, because what we got to learn how to do is build soil. Yes, are we under
this? Yes.
Yes,
right.
We're on it.
We're on that, right? And there's two ways of doing it. And first is with leaf litter, which is what we're doing with this food forest. We're creating a forest, and fast forward, we're successioning all those things that we're planting, and we're doing it much faster than nature would do it. And then the other way is rotating animals through pastures and in meadows, and that's how you would create soil the other ways. So like, these are the two ways that we could utilize to restore the land. And food forestry is it. I mean, we're in the tropics. Like, everything is trying to turn back into a forest. And either we could orchestrate it to turn it back into a forest, or we could mow it.
And which ones do we want to do? We want to transition away from the mowing, and we want animals to do the mowing.
Exactly.
So we're looking to collaborate with people who have more experience with animal systems.
Those are the next things, man, these animal systems and the food forestry. Like, so please, like, if you want to learn how to do this stuff, come out, take it in with your eyes, process it with your head, and then, you know, put your heart and back into it.
So would you say that's what kind of distinguishes a food forest from a regular farm or a garden?
Well, orchards' intentions aren't to create soil. What's an orchard's intention? To create fruit.
Fruit. Yeah.
So, I mean, as far as where I go, like, first intention is to create soil.
Sure, sure.
So, yeah, in food forestry, like, as we create the forest is grown to be a nursery for the fruit trees. So that forest is not only like its own fertilizer being grown and biomass being mined, but it's also windbreak for the trees. It's a nursery for the trees that you would build out of, like, you know, nursery shade. We grew that. It's called pigeon peas. So, like, the whole forest is there to take care of the fruit trees, and it's also mining the ground and leaving holes in the ground for all the water to penetrate into to actually saturate the soil and start rehabilitating watersheds. Like, as we learn how to build forests, we learn how to rehydrate watersheds. And, I mean, we all know that the water situation is not going to get any better. So this is this is how we take back things, is with learn how to yield forests.
Yeah. What you said about, you know, sort of exponentiating or speeding up how the leaf litter comes down. It's like, I'm lucky enough to live at a place and caretake it that has just been leaf litter for, like, I don't know how many years, 100 or something.
Soil
the soil is incredible.
Yes.
It's incredible. It's untouched. It's pristine. Mm. And, you know, granted, it probably doesn't have a whole lot of fertility because of all the Java plums and stuff that grow in the forest, but the texture, it's dark, it's rich. I know it's rich in biological life for sure, and certainly things are thriving. Well, my God, I would love to keep talking about food forests for another really long while. I hope we'll get another chance, but I do want to take an opportunity to do a quick announcement. I know you also have an announcement, Paul, but I want to let everybody know that Kauai Mini Golf, God bless them, is offering a free Thanksgiving dinner tomorrow to all those who may desire from 4 p.m. until the food runs out. So starting at 4 o'clock tomorrow at Kauai Mini Golf, right there on the highway in Kilauea Town, And there is music scheduled already with full music set up and a sound system. And they are also offering for other bands to come and perform some music as well. So if you are interested, if you're in a band and you're interested in helping entertain for the event tomorrow, go ahead and give Kauai Mini Golf a call if you would like to.